Det är dags att börja.
Nej, jo, hon är 11. Klockan är 11.
God morgon och hjärtligt välkomna. Jag heter Mikael Nyström. Det här är Marcus Lassfolk. Vi kommer att vara era gäster, eller vi kommer att stå här och tramsa. Ska vi prata engelska eller ska vi prata svenska?
Jag tror jag lovat engelska. Är det någon här inne? Is there someone in here who does not understand Swedish? Det var ingen som svarade.
Men det är inspelad, eller hur?
Ja, ah, okej.
Okay. Så då måste vi köra i alla fall. So we will do this in English. Because it's getting recorded. This session is about data center health checks and monitoring. One of the issues we can see is that when people do have a lot of monitoring equipments, like SCOM or OMS or something like that, it tends to work like this. There's a lot of issues in the console. Yes, I know. We need to clear them out. Yes, let's do that. Now we don't have any issues. I know, it's great. They're coming back. Remove them fast. If you're driving a car and the dashboard says, out of oil, and it's a red flashing one, and you go like, I need duct tape to cover that up. It doesn't really add oil to the engine. It's just going to break down. Now, there's two kinds of monitoring. It's either health checks or monitoring. Monitoring is the day by day when you do check that the server is running, the agents are healthy, you do have an Active Directory, there's no fire anywhere. But health checks is more of the, I want to see a bit more, and I want to see all the issues. So I can present that for a customer and say, here we found the following issues and they need to be fixed. And that can be done using built-in components or PowerShell scripts. Now, since I've been working with customers for a long time, health checks is something I actually use them for another purpose as well. Have any of you seen like a lot of computers in Active Directory that doesn't exist? Yeah. So I want to know that. Is it important for the fact that they don't exist? Not really. It's not really important. It doesn't matter. But it tells me something. It tells me that this customer doesn't use automation. This customer doesn't really have any kind of processes or routines to clean up. So I want to check some more. Do we have any computers in the WSUS that doesn't exist anymore? Yeah, we do. They don't clean up. They don't have processes. This organization is not working proactively. This organization is actually extinguishing fires. They spend too much time on doing something they shouldn't, and they spend no time on the things they should be doing. They need help. So that's why I want to see all these weird other things.
And in my previous life, I were working for Microsoft as a rapid response engineer, which meant that I were flown down to the customers when they were having issues all over Europe, Middle East, Africa. If someone had an issue, two things would happen. If the support had not solved the problem in 2 or 4 hours, at that time, Bill Gates would get an email, and my phone would ring, and I would take the first plane on site to the customer and solve the problem, which was pretty cool. It gave me a lot of air miles, free trips everywhere, but it was also quite expensive for Microsoft to fix the problems when they had happened. And at one occasion, a huge European bank had to close all bank offices for 2 days because their infrastructure was down. And this did cost a lot of money, both for the customers and for Microsoft. So they changed that role. In the beginning, we were like 10, based over all of Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Today, Microsoft have, I don't know, like 30 or 40 people like that just covering Sweden. And the difference is that today, they're spending a lot of time on proactive stuff, making sure that the problems does not even happen, because it's cheaper, and to be honest, you don't really want to have the problems. So it's better to make sure that they don't exist or turn up in the first place instead of fixing them afterwards. And that's why it's so important to do monitoring and health checks. And as Michael said, it's not a huge issue if you have 200 computer accounts in the AD that doesn't exist anymore. But the problem is that when you start to have things like that everywhere, it's hard to know when the problem really exists. And that's why it's so important to keep it clean, keep it up to date, to get rid of all the junk, just like at home. It's easier to keep it cleaned and tidy if you don't have a lot of junk spread around.
We've seen customers that want to do a report. They want to do a report of items. And when you want to do a report, you always use the sources you have. So I want to do a report of all my computers in Active Directory. And I want to check if they are online. If half of them doesn't exist, you only have like 50% online. Is that a good number? Well, a lot of them doesn't exist anymore. How many? I have no idea. So how many of the machines are actually online? I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing here. I'm just getting paid. I should be doing something else, like driving a bus or something. I don't know. I actually don't know at all. Let's say that you have a requirement of having at least the number of following patches needs to be installed on the following machines no later than 30 days, and you go into WSUS or Configuration Manager to get a report and it says 22% of the machine was patched correctly. Okay, so that's 78% that doesn't, well, a lot of them doesn't exist. Which one? I have no idea. I actually don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just goofing around. There's a button here. I'm going to push it from time to time. It's like, I don't know. Anybody have that feeling sometimes? I have. So, health checks. How often should you do health checks? Once in a while. Who should do the health check? Let's say that you manage Active Directory. Should you do the health check? No. You should ask someone else to do it for you. Could be a colleague. Why is that important? Because when you run the health check, you're going to go like, yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that too. Yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah, I know it. Yeah, we don't have any issues. But it gave you a list of 400 issues. Yeah, but I know of all those. Isn't that true? Yeah. It's better if someone else does it. They go like, all these issues? Yeah, I know. Okay, that's great that you know, but I don't think it's okay. So you need to fix that. Oh, then I need to work again, and I hate that. So here's a couple of sample scripts. And all the scripts you're going to see right now, they are currently on GitHub. So if you go and you find them here, we're going to publish a post on it. But just to make sure that everybody knows that these are available.
Yeah, because usually we do a lot of scripting on stage, and then we get mails from customers asking, could we have those scripts? And we said, yeah, sure, I'll publish them. And then we never get around to it, and we start getting hate mails and stuff. So today we decided, okay, let's put them on the web beforehand so you can get them right away.
So we're going to be in the demo script folder, and we're going to open that on GitHub. And that means you're going to end up in the Deployment Bunny. And you go to Deployment Bunny demo script, and you're going to find them here. There they are. And some of them were recently uploaded.
Modified.
Okay, so there they are. Let's see what we have. So here's a very simple script that actually checks Active Directory. You don't need to check everything in Active Directory. You just need to know that it's working correctly. So, and I'm going to increase the font size so you can actually see in the cheap seats back in the row. So we get the domain controllers. We need to find all the domain controllers. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to know what we have. So I apparently have two domain controllers. And then we're going to connect to each of them. And the easiest way to do is to use a test connection. Now, test connection PowerShell script is pretty nice because it does have the ability to do different things. But you can, instead of using test connection, you can use test net connection as well. Test connection is slightly better because it does have a function called common TCP ports. And common TCP ports means you can specify exactly what it should answer on. I mean, I'm going to do a remote session to these machines, which means that WinRM needs to be enabled. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard. Pinging the machine and say, yeah, I do answer on ICMP doesn't really give me anything. I need to have WinRM access. Or if it's a file share, I need to have that. Anyway, you can specify what you want to check, and then you can say, well, if it doesn't answer, then don't do those checks. Here's a very easy one, and you can use this for anything. You are actually getting every service that is set to be automatic. And we check that everything that is set to be automatic is actually running. And when you run this against a massive amount of servers, you're going to realize a couple of things. There's a lot of things that is supposed to be running that isn't running. How do you fix that? You have two options. You either make sure they are running, and then you run the health check the next week, and they're not running again. Should you or should you not start the services if they're not running after a week again? You should not start the services. You should figure out why they are not running. And then you should have some kind of automation that remediates that. Otherwise, you need to do this again and again and again. Have any one of you done something in the past that you've been forced to do once more? For those who doesn't raise your hand, you're lying. And I know that, because we all repeat the same thing. It's just that we do it this time, and then we do it the next time, and every time we think that, yeah, it's just this time. It's like paying parking fees or parking tickets. Yeah, it's just this time. No, it's going to happen again. Like paying tax. It's just this one. No, you're going to do it again. It's very simple. It's going to repeat itself. So one time you manually fire it up because it could be something, and the next time you need to figure out how to fix that. There's a log file on domain controller called passwd.log. Anybody knows what it does? It gives you a list of names and IP addresses of computers that is trying to log on to the domain controller, but there's no site for it. This is something we see a lot of happening around for customers. They're complaining about slow log on. They go like, yeah, what do you mean slow log on? It takes like 6 minutes to log on. How can that be true? Well, if you're in Minneapolis and your domain controller is on Hawaii, then it takes a while because someone slipped up to add a network to the site configuration and Active Directory, and that shows up in this log file. But that's not that log file. That's the log file. That log file actually gives you every time someone is changing an account's password or trying to and fail. So that's the password log file, and that's the logon file. We then use the DCDAG to verify that all the services are running, access to the sys volume, dump the event log, and run the BPA scanner. This is a 66-line script, and it takes a few seconds to run. Say a few seconds, but less than a minute. And here's really cool because it gives you the last events, which is, that's not good. That's not good. I should fix that. There's a lot of things I should fix.
Yes.
And here's someone that tried to change a password and failed. I have no idea why, but I need to fix that. Okay, this is not optimized. And it's a virtual domain controller, yada, yada. So how many of you work with small business environments? Anyone? Could you have this as a scheduled task running at the customer site and sending an email every week? Is that possible? If you then call the customer and say, hey, I found a couple of issues in your domain controller. I think you should fix them. What is the likeliness of the customer saying, no, I would like to keep the errors? You think that? They will do that, like to have the issues? Yes, of course they would. Or maybe they're going to say, well, you can fix them. DHCP, same story here. We can check DHCP. It's nothing fancy, actually. And it's a quite fun exercise, because in this case, we're going to connect to the domain controllers, because I know one of the domain controllers isn't the DHCP server. But we're going to use the PowerShell command get DHCP server in DC, which gives us the list of all the other supposedly DHCP servers in Pixie server. Those are the ones that it's authorized to provide DHCP services in Pixie services. But I only have one. Maybe. Then we try to access those machines. We grab all the scopes, and we grab the percentage free. And then we run the BPA scan on this. So let's run that. The domain I'm checking, by the way, is my own domain back home. My Windows Server 2016 is directly connected to the environment using direct access, which is, it's trying to access the domain controller, DHCP server 192.168.133.128, and that doesn't exist. Maybe the list in Active Directory is incorrect. And scopes. And I have 81%, that's fine, right?
Yep,
that's fine. And the BPA that didn't say anything. The BPA doesn't say anything because it's just checking the DHCP server on that server. But since I did find five different DHCP server and I only have one, maybe I should remove the other fours from Active Directory because they are authorized to provide DHCP services. And that shouldn't be true. Another thing. How many of you remember this? Anyone seen this before? It was a brand new feature in Windows 7. This is actually a really good tool. However, it's not enabled by default, but you can enable it using group policies. It gives you the reliability index. This is very simple. If the machine has a reliability index of 10, it doesn't have any issues. It's working really great. If it has a reliability index that is below 10, it did have issues. So every time it crashes, it goes down to another value. And then after time goes by, it's going to increase. Would you say that it's reasonable that a domain controller that nobody logs onto should have a reliability index of 10? Is that normal? Or would you like to have another number? Is one good? Then it reboots every 10 minutes because it's blue screening. Is that a good domain controller? Maybe it's a bad one, right? This server, it's used as a workstation. Therefore, it blows up from time to time, and I can actually see all this. Now, the downside of this tool is that you can only see it like this. Or can you? Well, there is a value. Called Win32 Reliability Stability Metrics. That's a WMI value, which means that you can query this. So if I could gather all the servers I have in my entire domain and grab the reliability index out of my servers, that would give me a number on how stable they are. And if they are good, healthy, and working, I should have 10s on all of them, right? I can agree that the terminal server that is used by end users, yeah, that could have another number because it's logged on and they do weird things. Why did you try to install this application? I don't know. Why did you try to remove this folder? I don't know. why did you try to sort all the conf files in one folder and all the exe files in another folder? I don't know. Why did you try to remove the Windows folder? I don't know. So I get that. Now, this is sloppy developing. But it's very simple. We're going to get all the computers. We're going to find the ones that are online. And then we're going to run this index against them. And when we do, we can get the variable called the sad truth and pipe it out to a grid view. Or we can create a web page. So now I have a web page that gives me a list that is sorting for all the servers that has a reliability index that is below, or I'm going to get all the servers, but we're going to use colors to say, well, you know, it's below 7, and therefore it gets yellow because it's a warning. Then we can have one simple task. I have Peter sitting over here. He works at Trusik. He's a very nice guy. I can say this. Peter, your task is very simple. Uh-huh. Make sure that we don't have anything else than green. Okay, what should I do when that's done? Just keep on doing that. That's your life task. Would you be busy for the rest of your life? No. And it's two ways you can fix it, right? You can either manually fix the issue every time, or you can start thinking, why does this happen? How do I fix this forever?
And is it possible that you have client computers or users in your environments who tend to call the help desk a couple of times reporting a problem, no one fixes the problem, and they after a while realizes, well, it's no use calling the help desk, they won't help me anyway or fix this. They kind of give up. So by using this and collecting information from all the clients, you would be able to get the top 10 worst clients or the people who have the worst clients or the most problems, and you can send a help desk engineer to that customer or user and fix those issues.
And before you do that, you should match computers with issues against usernames. You will eventually find that sometimes it's not really the computer that is a problem. Because if you move the computer to another user and the user gets a perfectly fine computer, the issues are moving from the old computer to the new computer, which basically means that it wasn't really a computer issue. I've seen that before. That's why I like to keep computer names, so I can track them easily, more easily. So we're going to test connections to all these machines, and then we're going to be able to put this up. Have anybody used a reliability index like this? Besides Peter, because you don't count.
Peter does not count.
We actually do have a customer that uses this all the time. This is how they measure quality in the system. They use it for workstations. We do it for servers. But they use it for workstations. And they have an average value. And when that drops below something, it triggers a task force that needs to fix something. Because everybody believes that everything is working, right? I mean, that's your belief. Nobody's complaining, therefore it's working. Is that true? It's incorrect. They just don't have the time to spend time on complaining because nothing happens. Oops, there's an error. I should fix that. It's actually looking in a wrong direction, depending on the fact that it hasn't started that services yet because I haven't enabled that machine. So we're going to get zeros from them. Nothing is like a good beer in the morning. And we are almost done. It is actually possible to run this in parallel. I just didn't create the script in that way. But we can do that. This is weird because it's trying to access a server that doesn't exist. And we did run through all these checks to verify that it did exist. It happens to be an inconsistency between DNS and the actual computer name, which is another good check you can do. So if I run this...
Well, I borrowed the screen.
You borrowed a screen? Oh my god.
To get that feature working, as Michael said, he hadn't enabled it on all PCs. The easiest way to do it is, Michael, I'm going to make a group policy for you, which enables the reliability VMI provider enabled, and you also have to enable a scheduled task.
Yes.
So we're running that one. I'm cheating and doing a run once. So it's doing a scheduled task, enable for that task name. And those two things needs to be done to enable this feature, if you don't want to run around to all the PCs manually.
On servers, because they automatically run on clients.
Correct.
It's just on servers it needs to be enabled. Flip back. So now we have an index. And you can see that the index is pretty nice here. Most of the machines are tens, which is good. But I have these machines. MBT01, 444, and 777. 8 could be fine. It could be me that does stupid things on it, or an application has crashed from time to time. But 4 means these machines are keep rebooting and blowing up over and over again. And I need to investigate them. Now, we did this for a customer, and they said, it's funny. We didn't experience any issues. I haven't seen any problems. So what's the servers doing? Oh, well, they are print servers. So what happens if you print and the print server is down? It queues on your computer, right? So nobody really understands why some printing takes time, and sometimes it's fast. Sometimes it's working immediately, and sometimes it takes 10 minutes. And every time they complained, the IT department was like, yeah, just wait. It's busy or something, I don't know. It turns out the machine was blowing up because of a bad printer driver. You've seen bad printer drivers, haven't you? You go like, who invented this driver? I would like to meet him in a dark alley and have a conversation with him. So this is a very good health check to run on a regular basis to just see that all the servers are healthy. Because it's really, really hard to fix an issue if you don't know you have an issue. You really need to understand that you do have issues. Yesterday we talked about being hacked. How long time, in average, does it take before an organization understand that they have been hacked in general?
Some of you attended our session yesterday. How long?
Anybody remember that?
Hadi? Yeah, a couple of years. 2 years is the current statistics.
Isn't that awful? It's like we had a break-in. Oh, did you report that to the police? No, it was 3 years ago and I just discovered it. Because I haven't been in the basement for 3 years. Scary. We also found a guy living there. I haven't seen him before.
Eating our food.
Yeah.
Drinking my beer.
Yeah. He actually had a party going on. And I was invited. That was cool. Okay, so that's weird. And when we run this for customers, they go like, oh, I thought it, I didn't know. And that's a downside with Windows. Windows is really good on surviving. It can stand a really massive attack. You can do really stupid things with it. I mean, just try to remove storage spaces from hard drives. It's tricky. It's like, can I just, reformat the hard drive? No, it can't because it's storage spaces. Yeah, can you just remove that? No, I can't. Dash force? No, I can't. Dash really, really force? That's blow up? Could you please die? Like, no, can't do that. So it does survive better than you can expect. Another check we do from time to time is actually virtual machines. So in this case, we're going to connect to a Hyper-V host, check the number of VMs, check the state. And one thing we do check is this. That part checks for every virtual machine that is using a differentiating disk. Not snapshot, they're using differentiating disks, which is fine. It's just that if they do use differentiating disks, you need to remember where the parent disks are. So it also grabs all the locations of the parent disks, so you know what to back up. We've been to customers that, by accident, removed all the parent drives. They thought they were legacy and not used anymore. And then they have 400 virtual machines that you can't boot because there's there's no parent drive anymore. I removed them, and it was bad. Do you have a backup? No, I thought it was just something we didn't need to have. Okay. How do you fix them now? Not sure how to put this. You can't. Well, we have a lot of important information on those drives. You had, that's true. You don't have that anymore. You actually don't have anything at all. You have nothing. And I'm so sorry, and I can't help you. So we checked that. This is something we recently started to checking since we have colleagues at work that has a hard time removing snapshots. Because it turns out, and this is unfortunately true, that if you do have a snapshot, it takes a while before the snapshot is actually merged in together. And the problem is that during the time it actually runs on a snapshot, it's using a dynamic disk, which makes it slower, and it also consumes a lot of space, and it's now hard to move the machine. So it's just something you don't want to have. And it's not even supported to run snapshots in a production environment. Not for 2012 or two, for 2016, if you do production snapshots, it is, but you shouldn't do that anyway. We also dump all the VM network adapters to find if we're using dynamic MAC addresses, if they are legacy, if they even are connected. And we also want to see the status, because that gives us the, is your network adapter degraded because it's running the old version of the integrated components? We do the same for CPU and a lot of other things as well. Now, of course, you can manually click around on machines and randomly find issues, right? Anybody thinks that really a good choice? It's weird because that's what people do. I want to check if your server is okay. How do you do that? Well, I usually go into the event log and browse around and see if I see any red things. And then what do you do? Well, I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing. I was poking around in the event log to see if it's anything red-ish. I've seen that. It's like, what are you looking for? I don't know. Red things. Okay. So in this case, we're running a couple of virtual machines. It gives me some kind of information. One, it gives me the information on the fact that they are running the incorrect version. They should all be version 8, since I'm running a 2016 machine, and they should do that. It takes a while to find all the differentiating disks, so we can actually check something else while we're waiting for this to go back. Yep. Because there are other tools. PowerShell is one of them.
Yeah, and recently I got fed up with the fact that we get servers quite regularly, new ones. They get reinstalled. We have Peter here who's setting up new servers left and right. We have Jürgen doing the same. And occasionally I need to connect by ILO, lights out.
Before you continue, of course we have a routine and a process for this.
Yeah.
Every time you put up a new piece of hardware, you should configure ILO correctly and put the name and the password and stuff like that. And it should be documented in SharePoint. That's our routine. It's manual.
And someone is bad at manual tasks. So, yeah, I got fed up with the fact that I had to use IP scanner like 3 times a week to scan all our subnets to find the ILO servers or ILO IPs and try to figure out which one is the one I'm actually needing to log on to. and so on.
Yeah, because the default ILO name is, of course, the serial number.
Yeah.
Which is not really matching the computer name.
So I was thinking, well, how can we fix this automatically? And I came up with a small script. Let's take that one, for example.
You need to increase the font size.
I can do that.
Look good.
Thank you. So basically, I made a small script that creates an XML file with the ILO settings I need. And in this case, I just wanted to retain its IP settings. So if it's using a dynamic IP address for the ILO, it will keep that one. If someone has been good and followed our process and set a static IP, it will keep that one as well. The thing I wanted to change was that it would get the same name on the ILO as the host name. So if the host name is, like in this case, clhost 031, it should also get that name on the ILO. And in our case, we're adding the domain name .ilo. So I should be able to do like ping clhost 031.ilo, which gives the IP address for that server. Quite easy. And next step is to run a small tool from HP, which is part of the HP SUM. And that one actually is actually able to talk to the ILO without having to log on. If I'm logged on the server with administrative credentials, I can read and do stuff on the server. So this is the graphical version, come on, which shows the information. I can add users and everything. And as you noticed, I didn't have to log on. And the command line tool can do the same. So after that, it actually runs the command line version with the XML file and adds and changes those settings, which is pretty nice. And the next step after that, we can run it. That's it. It ran. It added, changed those settings to make the ILO registering the DNS with those names that we have configured.
And we have another version of this script, which also adds all the needed account names, passwords, and everything else. So we don't really configure ILO. It just happens automatically as long as we install the machine and have the configuration, the drivers for it, then it runs those scripts on the machine. And we can do that on a scheduled task. So even if I rename the machine, well, then ILO gets renamed. We could, and we are working on a solution where we actually have all the configuration in an XML file, so we grab the information on the fly and automatically configures everything. Because we are just too lazy to do things manually. And that happens every time.
Yeah, and as Michael said, the next step was to automate this so I don't have to log on to each server and update and run the tool myself. So I created a group policy, which is filtering on all physical servers. So it's only running on physical servers, and that one is quite easy, where the computer system is not a virtual machine. There's no use to run the tool on a virtual machine, right? So if it's not a virtual machine, it will try to run. And the next step is that, okay, we might have something else than an HP server. Whoops, preferences. And I'm running this as a scheduled task. That's pretty easy. But I've made a condition to check for that tool, because that should be part of our installation process. If it's an HP server, MDT will automatically install the tools. So if they exist, it can run the tool.
It's just one problem. We are supposed to use a certain routine every time. Have any one of you ever did something that didn't really was according to rules and regulations? No one. That's amazing. Or Maybe it's not, because nobody wants to say that. But everybody does that. Well, we're supposed to install this, whatever it is, using the following tools. But I didn't do that. I manually installed it. Oh, well, you shouldn't. No, but I already did it. Well, you should reinstall it. Yeah, but I don't have the time. So it wasn't correctly installed. Therefore, we need to compensate for that anyway, because we still need to have an organization that actually works.
Yeah, so the tool runs then every night and updates those settings. Well, if they were already set, no change is done. If someone had been doing something bad, it will revert them back to the settings. And the servers will then automatically register here in the DNS with the right names. And if they're later removed, the DNS scavenging will automatically clean up the old records.
Yes.
So we keep it up to date easily.
If you flip back, let's see what happened here. So this is a very simple report. It gives me the name of the computer, memory, name of the CPU. I do apparently have 51 virtual machines on my laptop. And the following machines are running incorrect version. Slightly too little. I need more memory on that one. The following virtual machines does have virtual, have differentiating disks. And this is all the disks that are actually using a differentiating disk. It apparently is the fact that I do have a snapshot on that machine. That's pretty recent, so I would say it's okay. Let's see the network adapters. So all of them are running dynamically MAC address enabled. For a demo environment, that's fine. For a production environment, that's not good. It should not be that way. I can also see that MAC address starts with 0015, which means that these machines were generated and created on the Hyper-V host itself. If I were running System Center Virtual Machine Manager, it would start on 001D, and this means if this is a customer environment and they're using System Center Virtual Machine Manager, they're doing something completely wrong, because they are manually installing servers and running through an ISO and clicking on things. We can also see the fact that a couple of these machines are actually running the incorrect version of the integration components because they are degraded, which is bad. So that was all the network adapters. Horrible. We can also see that we have a bunch of legacy network adapters. Whew. Horrible. We can also see the fact that some of these are checked for migration, so they do have a setting in the Hyper-V manager that allows them to be migrated, but a lot of them doesn't have that. So if I go into this machine and I go settings and I go to CPU, this one is checked for migrate to physical computers with a different processor version. That's fine. Basically, every machine should have that. Otherwise, they can't be moved while they are live. And here we can find a bunch of them, which is set to false. Bad. Memory. Dynamic memory. Startup, minimum, maximum. We could recalculate this in gigabyte. But it just gives me a head up on the fact that, well, these are the issues we have. I guess some of you are patching, and some of you are using WSUS. Some of you are most likely using something else. But if you do use WSUS, you can see things like this. You can either subscribe for a report on WSUS. Anybody doing that? Having a report generated by you do? Do you actually watch it, or do you have a rule in Outlook that says delete? Because it's a problem. I do have a subscriptions for a lot of things, but it just tends to end up in a folder. I never have time to check it. Because at the moment the report arrives, I'm doing something else. So I rather run these reports manually. But anyway, so these machines haven't contacted WSUS in 10 days. And the partial commands you can use is very simple. In this case, we just specify a time check that sets it 10 days back, and then we get the WSUS computers where object, property, last reported status time. let's assume these machines actually does exist. Let's assume they are. And they didn't check on WSS. How do you fix that? If it's a Windows Server 2016 or Windows 10 machine, you need to run a command to fire up the service to restart the WSS client. If it's an older version of the operating system, you can run the command line /detect now. Could I actually have a script that runs through every server I have on a regular basis, and for those machines that doesn't report into WSS, I automatically try to remediate that by firing up the client. And then I wait for an hour and verify that they did. And if they didn't, what can you do then? How do you fix a WSS client on the Windows Server 2012 R2 that doesn't report in? You reset it back to factory default by stopping the services, cleaning up the cached folder, and re-enable it again. Can you create a script that does that? So for the machines that didn't fix this, you automatically reset the WSS client. And then you check again. Now, for the few machines that couldn't be remediated, those are on the list because you don't know how to fix that. And you will most likely end up with reinstalling them anyway because the machine is most likely busted. But we can do the remediation for everything. And that is what's wrong in many cases. People manually try to fix the issue over and over and over again. It's like when you were small. Do you remember that when you were a kid and you were late home and your dad and your mom said, don't be late again. And the next day you were late again. And they tell you that every day and you never change. And you get yelled at every day. And you always say, tomorrow I will be in time. And you never are. You should automate that. So that was all the scripts, my friend. We have 13 minutes and 52 seconds to go into Azure and check OMS.
Yeah.
Because this is scripts we run to check the health. We can extend them to even remediate things, but in a larger environment, this is not really practical because it's going to take a lot of time. Then it's better to use ready-made tools that does it for you. So for instance, in Operations Management Suite, they have an Active Directory check that runs 108 checks every week. And it gives you a green checkbox and say, hey, your Active Directory is perfect. Great, then I know. What did it check? I have no idea. But according to Microsoft, it's in perfect health. Have you shifted the screen to your screen?
Not yet.
Not yet?
It's still loading.
Still loading.
There we go. So I guess you've seen OMS quite a lot in the last year. And it's constantly evolving, and they're adding more and more features to it. By just opening the solutions gallery, a year ago there were like 8 solutions. And you see, it's a bit more than 8 now.
Yeah, plus 1.
Yeah, maybe plus 2. A lot of them are still in preview, and more are getting added all the time. And I think we will quite soon also see solutions from third parties, where they add, because currently it's just Microsoft solutions here. And we like to add everything to play around with and get a good picture. Michael spoke about the AD health checks. The AD assessment is pretty good, as he said. There is more than 108 in total health checks that they do on your environment automatically. One thing that's good to know is that the health check assessment is updated once a week. So if you do something bad, it might take a week until it shows up here. On the other hand, if you fix something, it will still be listed as a problem for a week. Or up to a week.
Change your password policy to enforce a minimum
password age.
Yes, absolutely. We're not going to fix that. The reason why we're not going to fix this is very simple. The environment you're looking at right now is our Fabric cloud environment. We don't really have any users in that environment besides the admins. So it's not really important to enforce that kind of policy.
Everything you see here is recorded from our production environment. Some things are wrong, yeah, and some are not. This one is one of my new favorites, Network Performance Monitor, which makes it possible to see the state of the network. So instead of asking the networking guys, hey, how is the network doing today? Oh, it's good, it's great, it's fine. Ping is working.
Yeah. Any issues? No. Does it perform good? Yeah.
As always.
Yeah. Because if there's any issue, it's not our fault. Because we don't do anything.
But our users are complaining that it feels a bit slow from Finland to Norway right now.
No.
That's not an issue. So in this case, by installing OMS in our environment, we can actually see the real response time and packet loss and stuff between servers. So by using OMS, I can check here. We see we have a loss of 2.47% right now.
How many percent?
2.47.
Bad. What did you do?
I didn't know yet.
You're trying to figure that out.
So we can see that some of our servers are actually having a bit of latency as well. So you can see that it's the server RDGV, the remote desktop gateway 02 to the DirSync server. For some reason, those servers are having latency issues. Is this something you would get? Is this some kind of information you would be able to get from your networking guys? I say no. This is the power you have or get through OMS. You can use this information to go to the networking guys and show them and say that, hey man, it looks like we have an issue. Can you look into it? And we can see that for different subnets, for different links. We can enable it for different subnets. We don't have to monitor everything. You can also define which servers it should be checking between each other. By default, it's doing a mesh, so everyone is trying to check the connectivity to everyone else, but your network might be segmented. And one of my favorite things with this one is the configuration. I mean, I'm not a networking guy, so I don't really know what a good latency is or a good packet loss. I mean, 2.47%, oh my god, that might be high. Or, well, if I had more experience, I might realize that, well, that's pretty normal. So that's why I like these ones. Auto-detect sudden changes. So instead of setting default values or fixed values, thresholds, which I'm able to do, I can also use this setting. So the OMS will then automatically notice that, okay, this is an abnormally difference, whatever, and alert you to that. And Michael's favorite is...
Yes, it's this one. And let me show you that.
Sure.
I like this. I like this very much. This is the security and audit. It gives me a couple of things. Number one, it gives me the IP addresses. Threat, malicious traffic. Threat intelligence and malicious traffic intelligence. So this gives me a picture, basically, of everyone that is reaching out to our external firewall, our remote access server, our gateways, our direct access servers. And it gives me the information I actually need. It gives me the information of the exact IP addresses that are reaching out to us. And it was kind of orange color, right? That means they are trying to reach us. When it's red, we are trying to reach them. And that basically means one thing. We are breached. Because there's no way a domain controller or an Hyper-V server randomly says, I want to search this botnet server. I want to communicate with him. I have a feeling I want to do that. That's not really going to happen. So this gives me all the IP addresses. In this case, machine 69.162.124.229 is a member of the Pony Loader botnet, and they are trying to reach into us. What can I do with this information? I could fire an alarm. And send me an email. That's going to be the easy thing to do, right? What else can I do? Because that's just going to tell you that, hey, a bad guy is trying to do stuff. Check, then I know that. But that doesn't really fix it, right? We had a really good suggestion, which you're not allowed to do yesterday, and someone says, you can launch a counterattack. That's not really okay, but you can if you have your own botnet. It's going to be a botnet war, which is going to be fun. But you shouldn't do that. Don't do that. But what you can do is instead of sending an email, you can use a runbook. So you could specify a runbook, and that's going to be Azure Automation. So you can say, I want to use this runbook, and in that runbook, I want to execute the following runbook script. What could that script possibly do? Could that script connect to a local orchestrator server? Could that local orchestrator server add the following IP addresses to the blocking list in the firewall of my direct access server? Is that possible? Could I also use a webhook to do the same thing? Yes. So I can either just accept the fact that I'm receiving this email and then I manually need to do something, or I can do a webhook that connects to a URL that then does something, or I can do a runbook that then does something. So it's possible to actually reach out and do things with this. I like that because it's so fun to see that people actually trying to do things still. Another one that I like is this. I use WSUS manually, or I automate WSUS, but the new update for update management in OMS is actually pretty neat. It gives us a list of all the computers that don't have any issues and the ones that have. What kind of updates do they need to have? And it is possible to use your local WSUS server to patch them using OMS. And that could be scheduled. So we don't have any scheduled. Apparently, I don't have any running. And apparently, I don't have any completed. But I could do scheduled and say add. And if I do that, I can specify the Monday run. And I go here. And now it gives me all the computers that have an agent. But if you look very carefully, you're going to also see that it can detect the groups in WSUS because we are actually subscribing for all the groups that we have in WSUS. So whatever you have in that targeting group on your local WSUS server now gets targeted for doing updates. Or you can use your Active Directory groups because we are synchronizing them as well. So both WSUS groups as well as Active Directory groups now becomes available in OMS. We can just grab one machine like the, I have no idea what, we can do the SCOM3. And then you hit plus. And then you specify the time and you can say reoccur weekly. And then you specify that the start time is and it needs to finish before whatever time it is. And now you hit save. And when I do, I just schedule that to run. So that is going to run, it's going to start, and it's going to be fine. Now, I can't click here to run that, but if I really want to run that, I can go to add and do now, and I do here, and you can see I can find a previous scheduled task, and I can select that. And I hate this, because you need to go there, you need to hit plus. And then you get that, and you specify one time, and you specify one time, and then you do save, and that means it's going to run immediately. Now, there is another way to solve this as well. And I don't have much time, but I always have 1 minute to do this. And I did a demo of this yesterday, but I'm just going to briefly show you that. If you interactively want to do things, you can. You can, but not here. But you can from here. Because you can use what's called the server management tool that is in Azure, and I can actually connect to this machine. And I can run Windows Update directly from here by just hitting Windows Update. And it will run Windows Update immediately. I can even do remote PowerShell connection to it. I can modify registry. I can stop and start services. You basically have Server Manager in Azure that connects through a gateway back to your own network. So I can interactively play with this machine. And can't connect for some reason. Oh, love demos, right? And
never mind, I think they get it.
Yeah, they do. I hate when demos break up. Maybe I can do that one. Let's hope it's going to work. It's connecting. I could have an authentication issue. Username is apparently encrypted. Please work. No, I need to investigate this. It worked this morning. But you can basically connect to the machine using this. So there are various methods and various tools. And if you don't have any monitoring solution today, you should start with doing health checks. You can find and use our health check scripts. You can extend them, play with them, do whatever you like. Or you can find a bunch of them on the gallery. Do that, and then you can start doing monitoring. That's very simple. Thank you for stopping by, and please fill out the evaluation forms.